Harihi Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahana Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, page 18. Sri Sukadev Goswami said, within the river Kalindi, Jamuna, was a lake inhabited by the serpent Kaliya, whose fiery poison constantly heated and boiled its waters. Indeed, the vapors thus created were so poisonous that birds flying over the contaminated lake would fall down into it. The wind blowing over that deadly lake carried droplets of water to the shore. Simply by coming in contact with that poisonous breeze, all vegetation and creatures on the shore died. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. According to Sri Harivamsa, the lake in the Jamuna was about one yojana wide, situated on the southern part where the Jamuna currents did not flow. If it were not so, the poisonous waters would also inconveniently flow towards the residents of Mathura. The waters of the lake were boiling hot. Shrapyamana. Moving and non-moving entities died even upon touching. Abhi Marshitaha. The wind, which was touching the poisonous waters and filled with the poison water drops. Viprushmata. Okay, so you have the river going, but it's on the side where the current's not flowing, because if you have a curve, then the current is flowing on one particular side, right? And so then, so it would have been on the inside, but about one yojana wide, so that's 8 miles, so it's quite a big lake. But because it's not, the river's not flowing there, then the poison didn't go on down to Mathura. So, east, south. Yeah, so it would have been on the side towards Mathura. When you come around Vrindavan and go farther, it would have been down there. Srila Sanatana Goswami points out that by the mystical science of Jalastambha, making solid items out of water, Kaliya had built his own city both within the lake itself and continuing into the holes on the banks of the lake. Mystical science of Jalastambha. Okay. That one's not known in the modern science. Sri Sukadev Goswami continued, Lord Krishna saw how the Kaliya serpent had polluted the Jamuna River with his terrible, powerful poison. Since Krishna had descended from the spiritual world specifically to subdue envious demons, the Lord immediately climbed to the top of a very high Kadamba tree and prepared himself for battle. He tightened his belt, slapped his arms, and then jumped into the poisonous waters. Something you see is like the Indian wrestlers, they always slap their arms before they start. You tighten your belt and you slap your arms like that. So it's just a natural phenomenon, right? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, only the Kadamba tree remained unaffected by the poison of Kaliya, because according to the Puranas, Garuda sat in this tree when taking nectar. It remained there to get the blessings of the touch of Krishna's lotus feet in the future. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead landed in the serpent's lake, the snakes there became extremely agitated and began breathing heavily, further polluting it with volumes of poison. The force of the Lord's entrance into the lake caused it to overflow on all sides, and poisonous fearsome waves flooded the surrounding lands up to a distance of 100 bow lengths. Right, so a bow is then 4 hands, so that's 6 feet, so 600 feet. This is not at all amazing. However, for the Supreme Lord possesses infinite strength. Krishna began sporting in Kali's lake like a lordly elephant, even though at this time he's small. But him jumping into the lake, then it caused waves that went out 600 feet, outside the lake. Right, so that's quite serious. This would be what you literally call making a splash. This is how it's done. Right? Swirling his mighty arms and making the water resound in various ways. You know, because when you move it like this, then the water, because you make a gap and then it crashes in, so it makes all kinds of noise. So on the top it sounds fun, but in the water it won't be as fun because, you know, the sound is amplified. So this way he's agitating Kaliya. When Kaliya heard these sounds, he understood that someone was trespassing in his lake. The serpent could not tolerate this and immediately came forward, because something might have fallen in, okay. But then that's it, then it's quiet, then okay, you leave it. But now you can see someone's deliberately making sounds. So now they're trespassing, so then they come. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, the force of Krishna jumping from the tree into the Jamuna raised huge waves filled with the poison of the agitated snakes. There were huge, fearful waves colored reddish-yellow, kashaya, with the poison. In all directions, there are waves 400 hands tall. 400 hands tall, that means they were at 600 feet tall. So 600 feet tall, and then they just went up and then crashed down on the land 600 feet in. So it wasn't just they kind of went, but it was just one big wave. Yeah. So 600 feet, that's big. You know, most tsunamis don't get that big. Krishna began playing in the water by making musical sounds of the water and swimming. As he churned the water with his two arms, a thunderous roar arose. Hearing that sound, the snakes concluded that there must be some rebellion above their snake hole houses. Not being able to bear that, they arrived there. Right, because snakes like to live in holes, so they would make into the holes in the bank of the Jamuna, and then also outside they would build, because by that science of being able to build things out of water. So in this way they had themselves a nice little, you know, scene going on. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, Kaliya saw that Sri Krishna, who wore yellow silken garments, was very delicate, his attractive body shining like a glowing white cloud, his chest bearing the mark of Srivatsa, his face smiling beautifully, and his feet resembling the whirl of a lotus flower. Right? Even though he's come there to fight, he still looks good. Mm-hmm. Right? The Lord is playing fearlessly in the water. So it wasn't that he's there and making faces and growling and doing that. He's just playing there as if everything's perfectly normal. So that means he's not a threat. You know, if you're making a scene, that means, okay, you see there's a challenge here. But for Krishna, there's no challenge, so he's just playing. Right? We also have to remember that the water is poison, and he's still fine. Despite his wonderful appearance, the envious Kaliya furiously bit him on the chest and then completely unwrapped him in his coils. Srila Sanatana Goswami points out, in actuality, however, Kaliya's biting the Lord upon the heart should be understood as his heart heartily kissing the Lord's limbs, and his covering him with his snake body should be understood as his firmly embracing all the Lord's limbs. Therefore, with anger means as if with anger, but actually it was with pure love. This is because the Lord was most worthy of being seen. Therefore, the Lord is about to show him great mercy. Because the acharyas in that, then they, how they see things, they see things, everything in connection with Krishna, always in, you know, how it's favorable. So even these unfavorable things, then they can see them in these other transcendental ways, because that's how Krishna takes it, right? Yes. That's how, because Krishna, what can disturb Krishna, right? Yes. So therefore these things aren't serious.
We usually say that everything is about intent. Here's the intent, is just the opposite.
Yes, but this is how Krishna sees it, how the acharyas see it. So therefore he gets some benefit.
Because he is such a big demon.
They're just being kind.
What about us?
We're small demons. We get small mercy. But because we're small, small mercy is a lot. So.
Maharaj, yeah. Like even in the wrestling arena, different people had a different view of Krishna.
Yes.
And that was pretty good, but you know, Kaliya is more poisonous, you know, than the people over there, you know. So, but still, you know, like it's been said as if, you know, he is embracing the Lord and he's been glorified so much, you know, in comparison to.
What about Shishupal? And Shishupal is one of the, you know, big demons, right? When Jai and Vijay, they're coming, and that's the Shishupal is, you know, one of the main ones, no? And so then he, Shishupal, because he was so offensive to Krishna, and Shishupal's mother knowing who Krishna was, I think he's, she's one of Krishna's aunts, right? And so, then she requested him that you tolerate 100 insults, because generally you'd never have an occasion where he would come up with 100 insults in a row, right? You know, he may come up with 5, 10 and then stop and get bored, or, you know, something else to distract, or it's time for lunch, or, you know, so that way then, you know, because it did, up to this point, it saved him, right? Because he had never come up with 100 insults at once. But the Rajasuya sacrifice, then he was so angry, you know, just that Krishna being labeled as the supreme in front of all these great personalities, like Brahma and Shiva and other like that, is who this, you know, this guy could be like that. And so therefore he kept going till he completed 100 insults. And Krishna sat there very peacefully. Right? It seems that in the Upakhyans it mentions that because they make an offering to that person and all that, then there was a plate with betel nuts on it, and so as each insult, he's moving one betel nut over, you know, counting until there's 100, you know. And then when there's 100, then he stood up and invoked Sudarshan Chakra and cut his head off, right? But we see as the Acharyas, they take each one of those insults and show how it's a glorification of Krishna.
So can you say that this is alankar?
Alankar meaning?
Ornamenting the Lord's glories.
It's ornamenting the Lord's glories. But now, what is the, as you were saying, intent? What's the intent behind classifying it as alankar?
I mean, that's
in other words, Kali is totally wrong, but the Acharyas are making it into alankar. Yes. See, the whole point is why take the nice part. Means we know from our own sadhana how we're trying to please the Lord. Someone else ends up pleasing the Lord, we're happy with that. So it doesn't change how we do. It's not that, oh, we can go up and bite the Lord on the chest and wrap him up on our coils, saying that we don't have big enough teeth and we don't have coils. So, you know, that one's out. Right? You know, we can't, you know, pick up Krishna in like a whirlwind, take him up into the sky, or we can't, you know, do the Putana thing, or we can't be a huge monster, you know, jackass and kick him, or, you know, so it kind of limits our sadhana. So our sadhana will just stick to being Rupa Nugas, we'll just stick to what he recommends. Because what's being said here, remember the teaching that Narad Muni is giving, right? That anything connected to the Lord then is purifying, right? And they get great benefit. Now, but, so, and it doesn't matter what it is, and he's emphasizing that point, so we'll go, yes, that's okay if it's, no, but, you know, it's not, no, even that, because it's in connection with the Lord. The Lord is his focus of attention. The Lord is the problem. So he's focusing all his attention on the Lord. Right? So because it's focused on the Lord, he's purified. Right? So Narad Muni goes to great effort. We see he very much emphasizes the point of it being about the connection to the Lord. We'll go, it's the quality of the endeavor. Like that. Because we're attached to the secondary. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So, but then at the end, then he points out So therefore, if all these demons and all these things and approaching the Lord with all kinds of basically mundane kind of mentalities, if that's connected to the Lord and they get so much benefit, how much more benefit are those who approach the Lord with devotion? But in that explanation there, he puts more emphasis on the other part, because we're going to go, yes, 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 but of course it's not as good as, you know. But he overemphasized it just to make sure that the point's driven home, that it's connected to the Lord. That's the perfection. Then, since we want it to be, you know, in pure devotion, therefore it's done to please the Lord. But most of the time you see the acharyas say, you know, even the demons, that, and then they'll put the emphasis on the devotees. But Narada Muni specifically does that to just, you know, how you say, fly in the face of our attachment to our concept of religious principles. That actual religion means in connection with Krishna. Not that, oh, he does this pious work, that makes him, you know? Does that make sense? Like we were discussing, oh, if I do something so expertly for Krishna, that's what makes it perfect. Rather than, no, it's being done to please Krishna. But that it's being done in connection with Krishna, you get benefit. But because we're proud of the work and we think that the work itself is what's causing bhakti, that's not pure devotional service. But we'll get benefit from it. Right? But the point is if we don't adjust it at some time, it may come up with a problem. Right? And so we can say, but, you know, what about the demons? The demons didn't get problems, they all get killed by Krishna. That's not a problem. Yeah, so, you know, we should just be happy. You know, things just didn't work out. We had a bad hair day, right? You know, so. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Sri Sukadev Goswami continued, when the members of the cowherd community who had accepted Krishna as their dearmost friend saw him enveloped in the snake's coils, motionless, they were greatly disturbed. They had offered Krishna everything, their selves, their families, their wealth, wives, and all pleasures. At the sight of the Lord in the clutches of the Kaliya snake, their intelligence became deranged by grief, lamentation, and fear, and thus they fell to the ground. Srila Sanatana Goswami points out, it is to be understood that simply because of their being bewildered in their intelligence, the residents of Braja failed to enter the lake. The Lord's not exhibited any motion was for the purpose of arranging the casting out of Kaliya, even though he had taken shelter of Sri Vrindavan, by displaying to the others present the extent of his evilness. The factual idea, however, is that he became stunned by the ecstasy of embracing him in pure love. Right? So he became stunned. So you see is that these both things are going on because... Yeah, and then you see here is by Krishna's arrangement is there that them seeing Krishna and Krishna being the Lord of their life, right? So then through the Udipan of what's going on here, then the how do you say, Upa Veda, Upa Shastri, Upa Anubhava. Okay. That for, so according to Anubhavas, then they manifest these symptoms. Right? Because Anubhava means what's the reaction to your being inspired and seeing Krishna. Mm-hmm. Right? So what activity you do, what emotions you feel, that's all the Anubhava. And then from that, then they became stunned, you know, due to their grief and that. So the Sattvika Bhavas, they became stunned, so they fell on the ground there. Otherwise, what would they have done? They would try to enter the lake to save Krishna. And this poison, then again, you know, the same problem that they had when they tried to drink the water. Yes. Right? So, by Krishna's arrangement, then they're all safe on the bank. Right? Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, out of their great affection for Krishna, being unaware of the extent of his potencies, they became overwhelmed with grief and anxiety, because they had nothing dearer than Krishna, and because they had dedicated their everything, life, property, affection, mind, and activities to Krishna. Sri Sukadev Goswami continued, the cows, bulls, and female calves, in great distress, called out piteously to Krishna, fixing their eyes on him. They stood in fear as if ready to cry, but too shocked to shed tears. In the Vrindavan area, there then arose all three types of fearful omens, those on the earth, those in the sky, and those in the bodies of living creatures, which announced imminent danger. Right, so the cows and the calves and all that, because they're in Shantaras, so Shantaras is in a specific interaction. So then it's just appreciating or dealing with the emotions that are happening. So then they would just stand there, right? Because the cowherd boys, then were two steps beyond that into friendship. Friendship is equality, so therefore they would do something, right? The BBT purport states, according to Sridhar Swami, the omens were as follows. On the earth, there were disturbing tremors. In the sky, there were meteors falling. Right, because in the West, somehow or another, you have the evening sky and the romantic couple, and it's all so perfect, and the meteors are falling, you know, and it's considered like perfect, but it's actually inauspicious. If you're out on a date and everything's going well and you see meteors falling, then you might rethink the whole arrangement. Yes. Huh? That happens anyway. Yes. But they just don't make the connection. That's all. So. Yeah. And the bodies of creatures were shivering, as well as the quivering of the left eye and other parts of the body. These omens announce imminent danger. Sri Sukadev Goswami continued, seeing the inauspicious omens, Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherd men were fearful, for they knew that Krishna had gone to herd the cows that day without his elder brother Balaram. Right, because Balaram's the elder, so he'll take care.
Yes.
We may say, oh, but they're so young, but in the Vedic culture, that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I can remember seeing boys that are like 5 years old, you know, really small. They have a problem. And they go to their elder brother, who's like six, you know, and they go up to him, you know, da-da, this, that, and all that. And they're acting in that very submissive mood, you know, they're five, and their brother, who's six, is acting in a very, like, you know, how you say, mood of, how do you say?
Fatherly?
Yeah, fatherly. Yeah, that kind of thing, that he's there and don't worry, I'll take care of it and this and that and all that, and that's all going on with the 5-year-old and the 6-year-old. You know, so that's just how it goes. So because Balaram's there, he'll have that fatherly mood. He'll take care, he'll arrange things, he'll tell him what to do, not to do. But Balaram didn't go out, so there's no one to tell him. So just being young boys, they'll be frivolous and this and that, so then they're in anxiety. Because they had dedicated their minds to Krishna, accepting him as their very life, they are unaware of his great power and opulence. Thus they concluded that the inauspicious omens indicated he had met with death, and they were overwhelmed with grief, lamentation, and fear. All the inhabitants of Vrindavan, including the children, women, and elderly persons, thought of Krishna just as a cow thinks of her helpless young calf. And thus, these poor, suffering people rushed out of the village, intent on finding him. The Supreme Lord Balaram, the master of all transcendental knowledge, smiled and said nothing when he saw the residents of Vrindavan in such distress, since he understood the extraordinary powers of his younger brother. Right? So he's not disturbed, he's just watching. Right? But what's the fun? The fun is the rasa, the intensity of affection that the devotees have for Krishna. So wanting to see that, going to see that, that's then what's important. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. According to Hari Vamsa, Madhava means master, Dhava of intelligence, Ma. Right? So Dhava means master, intelligence is Ma, right? Balaram is here described as the master of intelligence and knowable of the power of Krishna's Lila Shakti, Prabhava Gya. Though he had the greatest affection for his younger brother Krishna, he understood there was a concealing of Krishna's powers through his Lila Shakti, right? So one could say, no, but he had that relationship affection. Why isn't he worried? Because he actually knows about the Lila Shakti, because he's the Supreme Personality of Servitor Godhead. So he's Godhead, so he has that knowledge. But he has that mood of service, but he's appreciating the service of the devotees to Krishna in their affection for him. And he understood there was a concealing of Krishna's powers through his Leela Shakti operating under Krishna's will. Because of this, it would have to be Balaram who would prevent Nanda and others from drowning themselves on the Jamuna out of grief. Mm-hmm. Right? So he's seeing that how it's going on, but he also knows what he'll have to do. Because if he's absorbed in that pastime, in that lamentation, who's going to save Nanda Baba and the others? Right? So Balaram has to do it, because he's there, he'll stop them. Otherwise, they'll all be, you know. Yeah.
This happens in all pastimes where Balaram is aware of Krishna's position, because then there's no charm in he being the brother, right? Because he's having that awe and reverence in all the pastimes.
But how did you get awe and reverence out of this?
Like, he knows that he is
No, but there's powerful. A difference between awe and reverence and knowledge.
But then the knowledge doesn't bring up awe and reverence.
But in this case, is it not enhancing the pastime? You'd rather have Nanda Baba and Mother Yashoda go into the lake and die.
No,
that would be the charm.
No, not in that sense.
No, but look at the whole picture. Don't catch just words. Right? In other words, there's a whole scene going on there. And if Balaram's not level-headed, how will the scene be controlled in a way that's favorable? Does that make sense? Because you have to understand, the cowherd boys, they're in friendship, Ras.
Yes.
So there's going to be a certain extent. But Nanda and Yashoda are in parental Ras. Mm-hmm. So they're supposed to protect Krishna. The cowherd boys naturally want to. But it's not their bhav, right? But Nanda and Yashoda, that is, they will enter the lake.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So who's going to stop them? So Balaram. So, where's the lack of charm?
This is in other pastimes also.
But we're talking about this. Have you seen it come up in other pastimes? Right? Only at the very end of the Brahma Vimohan Leela, then we see that Krishna makes Balaram aware.
Yes.
Otherwise, Balaram's not going to be aware. So therefore, if Balaram's aware, it's because Krishna wants him to be. Because we have to remember, Krishna's Leela Shakti is what's controlling the whole thing. Balaram's Leela Shakti is assisting Krishna's Leela Shakti. Because the point is, Sladini is the main.
Mm-hmm.
And Samvit and Sandini are serving to create the environments and activities that are then tasted in the Hladini. So Balaram's in charge of those. So that's why he's the Supreme Personality of Servitor Godhead. All expansions of Krishna are all his devotees. But of all of them, then Balaram's the original. So therefore, as Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then Balaram's the Supreme Personality of Servitor Godhead. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, therefore, then don't take that knowledge means lacking charm because it's awe and reverence, because it didn't mention awe and reverence here. Because Balaram is a mixture of friendship and parental rasa, so where and in Braja Bhav, so where's the reverence? Why would there be reverence? He's God also, so all the things that, where does reverence happen? In Vrindavan or in Vaikuntha? Okay, so who expands the Vaikuntha? Balaram. So therefore, where's the reverence? He is that. He is that opulence. You understand? So there won't be any contradiction here. You don't have to get an anxiety that Balaram's ruining the mood here.
Maharaj, in the mind, I just wanted to know this. In the minds of Vrajavasis, is it that never ever this idea comes that Krishna is Supreme Personality of God? Because we see gopis praying that you are the one, you know, Brahmaji prayed for you. And that's how you descended to kill the remove the burden of
it's just
the
like this. Does the wife understand that her husband is, let's say, the high court judge or the prime minister of the country? Does she know that? Right? Can she explain it to others? Can she explain to others how her husband is, you know, the prime minister and this and that? Can she do that? Does it matter in their relationship? You understand? So when we deal with rasa, take it in its more complete. Does that make sense? So within that, there's not a problem. That's why you see when the gopis come here to preach, they know the philosophy better than anybody. But the point is that's not why they love Krishna. You have to understand, Braja Bhakti doesn't mean they don't know he's God. It's they don't care. It doesn't affect the relationship. Does that make sense? That's the whole point. In Vaikuntha, it affects the relationship because the relationship is based on that, on reverence, on majesty. So that's how they're expressing it. So they know he's God, and that's important. For the Brajbasis, him being God's not important, so most of the time you don't see that they even consider it. Yes. But in moments, then they may consider, you know, because Gargacharya, then he said, coming up as a chapter on wonderful Krishna, right after the Govardhan Leela, and they're considering, well, you know, maybe, you know, he's as good as Narayan, or maybe he is, but it doesn't matter to them. You know, it just kind of like clears the bewilderment at the moment, and then they just go back to loving Krishna. Right? Because Krishna takes pleasure in doing these great things that he can do there, and it'll still have loving relationships. See, because in Vaikuntha he does something great, it just produces awe. And what happens in awe? Does anybody do anything? No. So it's only when the Leela Shakti reduces that awe that even in majesty that they can render service. How do you render service to God? He's unlimited and you're not. What happened to Arjuna when the universal form is manifest? He can't function. Right? So the whole point is even in Vaikuntha there has to be some covering of the Leela Shakti to that, but it's only enough that they can function but still maintain that awe and reverence. Right? So but then in Vrindavan it's even more. It's not that they don't know, it's just not important. That's not why they love him. See, it's just like a businessman. Why does he like the Prime Minister? Because if he's seen in a picture with him shaking hands, maybe he can get some good deals, other people will, you know. You understand? But there are people who like him just because they like him. He grew up with some friends in school, and now it's, you become the Prime Minister and all that. I guess I can't, you know, wrestle with you anymore and all that. You know they joke around, they laugh and all that. And, you know, you're the Prime Minister, but I can still eat more chapatis than you. You know, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, so it's just another aspect in the relationship. It doesn't get in the way. Does that make sense? So we have to understand that. So that's the fun, is being able to do stuff that, when in other realms, would cause awe, and in Vrindavan it doesn't. Right. He kills the demons, the demigods are offering prayers, showering flowers, dancing, singing, and the cowherd boys are just going, hey, look what our friend did, you know. You understand? That's what makes Braj special. Krishna can just be himself how he likes. And the Brajbasis are cool with it. But in other realms, he has to adjust according to the mood of the devotees. In Vaikuntha, he has to be God. Because otherwise, they wouldn't be able to deal. Does that make sense? But in Braj, he can do whatever he likes. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that that's what makes it so nice. That's what's special. That's why the residents of Braj are so special to Krishna. Because they love him for just who he is as a person, not his position, not his power, authority, you know, him being the original sort. They just like him as a person. Is that the sense? I think there was one story, it was, I can't remember what it was, but just part of it. There was this one girl, she was extremely beautiful. She may have been like one of these pageant winners and stuff like that. And generally girls like that, they get into like welfare work and stuff like that. So then she was working at... Oh, no, no, it was the other way around. Oh, yeah, no, this story wouldn't work. Yeah. Different methods. Okay. You're thinking, wait, we want to hear the story. Yeah. Yes.
Marge, we know that the relationship is built on qualities.
Yes.
So does it mean that Krishna in Vaikuntha and Krishna in Vrindavan has different set of qualities that devotees appreciate?
The 60 are the same. But it's the four that Krishna has in Braj that are the aspects of sweetness. The other ones then will be in balance and support of that sweetness. Because you see, there's very nice qualities in there. It's not that in Vaikuntha they don't think of Krishna in a sweet way, but that sweetness doesn't in any way get in the way of their awe and reverence. Like there's that one song, you know, I can't remember, all I know about is Madhuram. It'll mention the quality, then Madhuram, this Madhuram, 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 Vipadamad, like that. So it's just, it's one of the famous songs in South. So the sweetness is there, but it's not the core of the relationship. The majesty is the core. While in Vrindavan, then sweetness is the core. So it's not that they don't appreciate he's done something special and nice and amazing, and that's why they sometimes think maybe he's a demigod, and why would a demigod come down here and hang out with us cowherd men? But, you know, they're happy anyway. We're very fortunate. Is that... Yeah, so that's the thing, is that this blend, there's not a problem. They can, just like Vaikuntha is just majesty, Vrindavan is just sweetness, and Mathura and Dwarka, that's a mix. And so you can have that range of going through from one to the other. There's not a problem. It's just, what's the particular taste of the devotee? So for the devotee, then it's that interaction. Qualities means that something's being manifest. You know, let's say like splendor, right? So it's a physical quality. And it means that the limbs of the body are so nice that they themselves appear ornamented even if they're not. Right? So we see is then Rupa Goswami explains that, and Prabhupada explains that, as when Krishna puts on ornaments, by Krishna wearing them, the ornaments become more beautiful. Not that the ornaments beautify Krishna.
Yes.
Right? So even without ornaments, he's already looks as if he's ornamented. Therefore, that's splendor. Does that make sense? So all the qualities then have a manifestation. Does that make sense? So that love is appreciated in those qualities that therefore creates then the external forms and interactions. Right? That's where the anubhavs come up. Right? So the qualities he has and how those qualities are manifest in his different activities, then that's what then creates the anubhavas in the devotees. So the qualities themselves are the udipan, at the same time is they... the qualities that then, subsequent qualities of the devotees that manifest from that, that's your anubhavas. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So the qualities are a very central feature. That's why the pastimes, then the point is qualities. Right? So Govindaji, who's the lord of pastimes, then he's known for his qualities. Right? Madan Mohan, for the relationship that the Lord and the devotees have, and that attraction the devotees have for Krishna. And Gopinath, in the love that they experience from the results of their pastime. Right? So, how is all that manifest? Means you have attraction, then what do you do? You do something, right? If you're, you know, above Shantaras, right? And you've tasted that nectar, but why? Because of an activity. So you're attracted, you do an activity. The activity produces a result. So the central point that connects attraction and the result of that attraction is the activity. And that's then governed by qualities. That's why then when we say Krishna's 64 qualities, that's then in Vibhava. Because by that, his 64 qualities, that then creates the inspiration of the devotees to interact with Krishna. So it's all about qualities. It's mentioned that Rupa Goswami is very attracted by Krishna's qualities. So you can see is that angle, that's our line. That's why we're in the line serving Govindaji.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right? So we could say is, but by, you know, just by logical sequence, then the acharya of Prayojana should be our main acharya, but it's not. It's the acharya of Abhideya who's our main acharya.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So Sanatana Goswami would be the senior most, but the actual central and main acharya is the Abhideya. So you see, just like a Dvaitacharya is senior in the cultural aspects to Nityananda Prabhu. But Nityananda Prabhu is actually the controller of a Dvaitacharya. A Dvaitacharya expands from Nityananda. So the Sandini potency is in service to the Samvit, which is in service to the Ladini. Does that make sense? So that's always done in the mechanics how it works there. Is that okay? Is that catch? So yes, the qualities are the thing, but the whole point is because of those four, they see the 60 qualities in connection with sweetness. And then you have those four that are specifically just sweetness. You know what I'm saying? It's like, how you say it? Yeah. Taking something that's sweet and then putting more sweet on top of it. Right?
Can you say, Mathura is a combination of sweetness and all beverages.
Yes.
So it's only with the place or it's with the individual also, staying there. Like Uddhava has all reverence and sweetness also.
He can appreciate. Means any of them in Dwarka have them too. Just like the prayers of Vasudeva and Devaki. Right? So some of them are about how he's their son and this and that, and some are about how he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's the point, is they go back and forth. They taste one, then they taste the other. If it gets too much reverence, then Yoga Maya covers, so then they come back into sweetness. But when it gets too much into sweetness, then it goes back into the, you know, majesty. It's not so much on reverence. It has that point. It's the Vaikuntha moon. So Dwarka, and they're considered Vaikuntha. You have Braj, and then you have Vaikuntha. You understand? So then we have Mathura and Dwarka. They are then the head of Vaikuntha. Because all the rasas are manifest in this and that. While in Vaikuntha itself, then you only have two rasas manifest. Shanta and Dasya. Lakshmi's there, but they just see her as the best servant. Right? So therefore, in that capacity of servant, even though she has a conjugal rasa, but our understanding, she just has that mood of service to Krishna. So even her conjugal relationship is a service. Therefore, then she's called Jiva. Right? And because of that being called Jiva, that creates a split in the Sri Sampradaya into Wadagalaya and Tengalaya. Because one group understands what Jiva means and the other group doesn't. Go figure. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the whole point. Yes. Yes.
Based on
Based on?
Worshipping on rules, regulations, or that makes worship of Rana Krishna more holy?
What makes it... No, not that it's because of rules and regulations. It's because you're only worshipping because of rules and regulations. In other words, at 5 in the morning, would you be at Mangalartik if it wasn't a rule? So that's why you're worshipping Lakshmi Narayan. Right? The cowherd boys, as soon as there's a little bit of light that you can move around, they're out of bed to go see Krishna. All the birds and that are all up waiting for him to come out. The cows are all up. Mother Jashoda, first thing, goes in there to wake him up. So as soon as the first opportunity that you can wake up, then they're there. So that's wrong. We do it only because it's the rule, and even that we're trying to get out of the rules as much as possible by quoting, we chant Hare Krishna, we don't care for the rules, you know. But, yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the point is it's not that it's not Radha and Krishna. Radha and Krishna are there on the altar. But because you're dealing with them as Lakshmi Narayan, they reciprocate with you as Lakshmi Narayan. It's Radha and Krishna, but they're reciprocating according to how you deal. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. You deal in Rag, they reciprocate in that platform. But the point is, Artik's still going to be an Artik. It doesn't matter if you're on the platform of Rag or not. When Krishna comes back from the fields in the evening, Mother Jashoda greets him with a lamp. So what does she do with the lamp? You know, she gets out a nice stick, puts the lamp on top, and then spins it, and then starts to do it, and then puts another lamp and spins that, and another lamp and spins that, you know, because it's a Lawrence Welk show, or, you know, like that. Or does she, like, do it like how we do it in circles and all that kind of jazz? Because that's the culture. It's the rules and regulations for us, because otherwise we wouldn't follow the culture. Because what happens when we think, oh, it's not about the rules, it's about the bhav, what's the first thing we do? Drop the rule. Mother Jashoda, it's about the bhav, not the rule. What does she do? She follows that activity. Because you have to express bhav through something. Right? Means you have the bhav, that's one thing. But then you express the bhav, that's more. So when we think, oh, I'm on a higher platform because I have that bhav and so I don't have to do the rule, I don't do anything, that's shantaras at best on a good day. And you tell me how shantaras is now, you know, the perfection. And because it's still another thing, it's about the rules, and for us it's not following the rules. The Raganuga is not following the rules. Well, Raganuga is that it's not about the rules, it's about your attraction to Krishna. So in other words, if you're thinking rules and that's the basis, then we're working in that platform. We're working in Vaidhi. Some say, no, but Raganuga, you have to read about the gopis and Krishna's pastimes and do this and do that and don't do this, don't do that. Does that sound like rules or not? Yes, so that's Vaidhi. They think that they're being all elevated and all that, you know, but they're not. You know, you want to see rules, go to Radhakund. Go down to, you know, Raghunath Das's, you know, place, that, you know, that where there's that kind of seat where all the big Babaji's are, and they're having lunch or some kind of, you know, program and sitting down for prasad. And for fun, go figure out where the most senior Babaji's line is sitting and go sit there and see what happens. Then we'll see who's Paramahamsa and who's totally stuck in their own made-up Vaidhi. You understand? So the whole point is it's popular, these things, but it doesn't mean that it's real. So we have to understand this. We don't have love for Radha and Krishna. Therefore, we're doing these things because we want to develop that love. So what does a person who has love do? They do these things. They offer artik. They offer things to Krishna. We sing six times a day. Well, why can't we just offer once? Do you just eat once a day? The point is Krishna eats six times a day. That's how it works. You know what I'm saying? Even in Ayurveda, they, you know, if you want to be perfect in health, then they recommend that.
Yes.
Right? So that's the whole thing, is that that's what's there. You eat those things at those times, in those seasons. That's what you're supposed to do. That's where it comes from. Krishna likes doing that. That's why then it becomes Dinacharya and Ritucharya. So it comes from there, but we're taking it, no, if it has a form, then it's something lower. Where does the concept that spiritual has no form come from? Huh? Impersonal. So you understand what's happening here? Is we get this mix of impersonalism and sahajya, and then we come up with our own idea of how it should work. That's why it says the real thing is like the razor's edge. Does that make sense? So, yes, it is Radha and Krishna on the altar. They say, oh, so it's Lakshmi Narayan on the altar? No, it's Radha and Krishna. But they deal with you how you deal with them. You know? You haven't seen that? Let's say you have this gentleman, he's there, and he's talking with these, you know, very sober gentlemen also. He's dealing in a very sober way, and then some lady comes up and he deals in a more sweet way, and like that, and then goes back to dealing with the gentleman and all that, and then a little kid comes up, you know, like a 3-year-old, a 4-year-old, and smiling, and he smiles at the kid, and then goes back to interacting with them. No? Yeah, so the point is you interact with whoever is interacting with you accordingly. So, because we are only doing deity worship and sadhana, we're only chanting 16 rounds because we have to. We're only reading because we have to. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point. So that's why we're working in Vaidhi. And so Krishna reciprocates that. But Vaidhi is the beginning of the process, so it's counted as bhakti. Right? Like the anyavilashita. The ita means, and those in pursuance of. So that's where we come in. Right? But then to think that, you know, I'm the big guy, then Vishwanath points out that bhakti starts at prema. Just in case you just forgot. And someone like Bharat Maharaj could fall down, even though he's in Uttamadikar. Right on the platform of Bhava. So that means up to prema, you are a sadhaka. But there's a difference between the sadhaka before Bhava and the sadhaka after, because one's conditioned, one's not. Right? So the Bhava bhaktas you don't generally call sadhakas, though it's technically Bhav sadhana. It's still a sadhana, developing the mood, associating with, following the activities, following the footsteps of those with rag. So that bhava is the raganuga. Does that make sense? And then prema, that's ragatmika. Does this make some sense? So, okay? So we're good? Yes.
As conditioned souls, we have such a vibhrama, that illusion about the truth about oneself and Lord. So, and the goal.
Wait. You're saying that as a conditioned soul, we have an illusion about the tattva, about ourselves. But some may argue as, no, we perfectly know how special and wonderful we are. Go ahead.
The goal of life is to revive the relationship with the Lord. So, how we can, when a sadhaka should balance between tattva and rasa?
Between tattva and rasa. The point is it's like this. The understanding of the tattva, what's the first point of understanding the tattva? What's the most important element that you gain?
Krishna.
Yes. And that is in opposition to and that conditioned mentality is yes. So in other words, the first thing you're establishing, we're not God, we're not the controller, we're not the enjoyer, we're not the friend. Krishna is. And so, therefore, because of envy, that's where the controller, because of lust, that's the, I'm the enjoyer. So the natural development of to love has turned into lust. Right? So, and our position of identity has turned into envy. So therefore, then I want to be the controller and enjoyer. Well, Krishna is the controller and enjoyer. Right? So that's why Balaram's smiling, because he knows that. So, then that's the first thing that's there. And rasa, that's going to come as you get purified. Right? The example that Rupa Goswami gives is that of someone who has jaundice. You understand jaundice?
Yes.
Yeah. So when someone has jaundice really bad, their eyes go yellow, everything looks yellow.
Yes.
Like that. And so the cure is taking rock candy, despite the modern idea that sugar is going to kill you, that's the only way to get rid of it. You know, like that. So, so by taking the rock candy, then it tastes bitter in the beginning. Right? So there is no sweetness. So even though you're following the process, only by intelligence are we following the process. We're not following because we really like to follow. We're following because we know it's better. By Krishna's grace, we're intelligent enough, by the grace of the Guru, that we are able to have that faith that this process will benefit us. So we follow it even though we don't have the taste. Right? Mm-hmm. Now, because the process is so powerful, then as we follow it, we become purified. And in that, slowly, slowly, a little taste comes. So then we're inspired to continue. But it's only because we continue. Then it goes from tasting bitter to being neutral. Right? There comes a point where it doesn't taste bitter, but it doesn't taste sweet. So if you eat, so if you're eating a you're sitting down at lunch eating a sweet and everyone's going, wow, this is so sweet, and you're going, this isn't sweet at all, you might check and get yourself some liver medicine. Okay? You understand? So then it comes to the point where it starts to become a little sweet, and then it just gets more and more until it has that full sweetness. So you don't have to worry about the rasa part. You have to worry about applying the tattva into your life practically as given by the acharyas, and then with time the heart becomes purified and rasa just it happens. Right? Tattva, you have to make the effort, rasa happens. Right? But at the same time is then there's another thing to control that one, is that Rupa Goswami mentions that when one has that taste for the rasa, then it's not shown. He gives the example of the housewife who has a paramour. She does her duties even nicer. So we think, oh, the more I advance, the less I have to follow the rules. But that is symptomatic of a Vaidhi sadhaka. Right? The Raganuga sadhaka, actually, they follow the rules better so that no one knows, no one understands. And at the same time, that's the process given. They want to please Krishna, so they're following the process. You understand? So, the definitions are there. They're very exact, but there's also things in place to see that we don't swing to the other side. So, in other words, we're in the impersonal thing. We understand that's wrong, so we swing over to the Hajya side. Then we understand that's wrong, we swing back to the, you know, Mayavad side. Then we understand that, we just keep going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Right? So, the idea is the razor's edge. You just, it's on this side, you just pull it down to the middle and let go. You know, but we, when it swings one side, we whack it so it swings back to the other side, then hit it again, and you know, like that. And it's not that the point is it's off, grab it, move it to the middle, and then it'll stay there. So that's why the acharyas make these points, but at the same time, there's counterpoints to keep us from going off the deep end, which is like how you say. Our specific inherent methodology. Does that make sense? Okay?
Yeah. Hare Krishna. While following the process of bhakti, devotional service, we have to control our mind so much. Because this mind find out some loopholes and all, some temptation, allurement, all this comes on the way of our devotional service. And then mind get trapped and go for self gratification or find some relaxation or all these things. So how can we control our mind?
The main thing is good association. If you keep yourself in good association, they're doing the proper thing, so you being with them, you have to do the proper thing. That's the main thing that you do. Then by studying the scriptures, and you are constantly reminded about what is appropriate and what's not. Like that. So then we start to contemplate it. So between studying, associating, performing our services, then that will then purify and uplift. Does that make sense? So the whole point is that we have to understand that if everything is connected to Krishna, then where's the question of sense gratification? You know what I'm saying? If you're remembering the prasad as Krishna, you're appreciating the nice qualities of Krishna as prasad, the nice taste and the textures, the fragrances, how it looks, like that. You understand? You know, the nice association of being with the devotees, all these aspects. Yeah? So then in that state, then you're remembering Krishna. It's only when we forget Krishna, then we see all these tastes and fragrances and textures and what it looks like, the presentation, separate from Krishna. That's sense gratification. We have to understand engaging the senses is not sense gratification. Engaging the senses not connected to Krishna is sense gratification. When we engage the senses connected to Krishna, that's called devotional service. Right? It's only because of the Mayavadi influence that we think spiritual means not engaging the senses, no form, no activities, anything like that. Therefore, if I'm enjoying prasad, that's Maya. No. If you're enjoying prasad, that's not Maya. If you're enjoying food, that's Maya. Does that make sense? So we have to understand is that Krishna's a person, we're a person, and so the whole thing's personal. We have this idea that it has to become impersonal to become spiritual. No. Because even Brahman is the effulgence of Krishna's qualities. Mm-hmm. So that means Brahman is just qualities. But unless qualities are applied, then it doesn't take on that higher element. So when we apply the qualities of what you're supposed to do, that's Paramatma. When we do it because it pleases Krishna, that's Bhagavan. You understand? So that's the whole thing. Is that's why then when we get impersonal, we start talking only qualities. You know, unlimited and, unfathomable if we're onto the Gyan side and, you know, equality and everyone should, you know, get equally and all that if we're, you know, on the karma side. You understand? So they're all impersonalists. So all this modern social, you know, crusaders and all that. What are they calling it? Something?
Social justice warrior.
Yes, social justice warrior. So SJWs. They're all impersonalists. Because they don't care about the individuals, they care about the group. You understand? But they're nicer than guys that don't. As long as you're within the group that they care about. If you're in a group they don't care about, they're just as nasty as anybody else. In fact, might be even nastier. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, the guy on the other side of the fence doesn't like you. But, you know, it stays neutral. But the guy on a crusade doesn't like you. Then you're really bad. Does that make sense?
We see here in the pastimes that there are what would be considered negative emotions, you know, anxiety or
but
fear. Or
who would be considering? It means you're stating it as if it's coming from an authorized source.
I guess from the material point of view.
Yeah, from the material point of view, they would be considered negative. Yeah. You can't say they are negative.
Right. So is it that we can only appreciate them only in connection to Krishna? That's why they actually aren't negative.
Means Krishna is all perfect, so anything connects to him is perfect. So it's just another aspect of that tasting the love for Krishna. Because the love of, let's say, it's just like this. You know, it comes down to Sambhog and Vipralamba. Right? So being with Krishna is appreciated. Then being not with Krishna, then that being with Krishna is appreciated even more. That's why then separation is considered more intense, because you're appreciating the interaction that is not there. But because of that intensity of the Vipralamba, then when you do meet Krishna, it increases again. So all these qualities, because they are connected to Krishna, then they're perfect. That's the whole thing. It's about that. It's not about the secondary. That's why when we're going through the Bhagavatam, first it establishes that we're properly following all the sadhana nicely. But then it brings out that it's not about the sadhana, it's about the pure devotion in performing the sadhana. Then it's pointing out that it's not even the activities we're performing, it's that we're doing it to please Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? And so to please Krishna, we please the devotees. The devotees have given us this sadhana, that's why we follow it. You know what I'm saying? If Prabhupada had given some other sadhana, that's what we'd follow. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is that it has to come down to it's actually the love for Krishna. So these are just different ways to enhance and bring out the various tastes. You know, it's just like, let's say, from a Westerner's point of view, a preparation that's bitter would not be good. But we see in the Vedic system, you start with bitter. And after you, it's actually, if it's cooked properly, you like it. It's bitter, but there's also that sweetness is there. You actually appreciate a good preparation because it's bitter, but there's a sweetness to it. So that's the whole point, is that these qualities seem like they're negative, but there's that positive element to it because it's about Krishna. So it's a nice thing. So it's only because, and why don't we want negative? Why do we want to separate negative qualities from spiritual? Because that's from the jnana part. Because we think the Mayavadis, then their thing is that the material world is a problem. Why is it a problem? Because there's all these motions, attachments, and that creates all these negative emotions and experiences. So spiritual must be the opposite of that. There must be no negative feelings. You understand? So we've accepted the positive ones, so we're not fully Mayavadi. Right? But this is still the residue left over from our attachment to karma and jnana that we're in the material world, because that's what we have. So that's why we want only things positive. But for Krishna, it's whatever's connected to him is perfect. They take on a negative quality here, but they don't take on a negative quality there. You know, just like doing an occupation is not a negative quality in the spiritual world. Right? You know, or listening to your mother is not a negative quality. You understand? Yeah, for the gopis, mother-in-laws are still a negative quality. So, yeah, so certain things are eternal. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Negative qualities in relation to devotion, so it's like the anxiety about the anarthas, what we have got.
But why are you in anxiety about the anarthas you have?
That's what keeps us away from the devotion service, pure devotion service.
Yeah, but which is keeping you away?
The anarthas or the...
Why not the anarthas and the anxiety? What's devotional service? Is one of the nine items focusing on anarthas? Right? So, in other words, that you're focusing on the positive aspects and avoiding the anarthas. Does that make sense? So, yes, anarthas aren't important, so they're avoided, but when you put your full attention on anarthas, then how is that devotional service? Because we're saying the anarthas are bad because they're bad. Right? But anarthas are bad because while anarthas are there, we're not remembering Krishna. So remembering Krishna is the main thing. That's the primary. Not forgetting Krishna, that's the secondary. Right? So in other words, we're remembering Krishna, and the activities we do to express that remembrance of Krishna, we don't forget Krishna, become distracted by the secondary. So being anxiety about the anarthas, yes, we're aware that they're there, but we surrender to the Lord. Are you going to make the anarthas go away? So by your anxiety, that makes it go away? No, it's about your dependence on Krishna, surrender to Krishna, trying to do things to please Krishna, that's what then removes the anarthas. Does that make sense? Just like, let's say, is it not a cultural cliche or a social cliche? There's that person who finds fault in everybody and everything. Right? Now, technically, if you look at it, they're not necessarily wrong. But is that, are they the life of the party? No. And in fact, as soon as they show up, everyone starts leaning over to someone else and going, who invited them? Or, what are they doing here? How did they get in? Or, no, I told them not to come. You understand? So in other words, this simply the fault finding, that's not actually the main focus. It's on the being able to see the, you know, what's the benefit and all that. But it's not sentimental. Sentimental is you only see the good, can't see any bad, even though it's obvious it's there. Here it's that you're seeing what's good and trying to adjust that the bad doesn't create a problem. That's the problem with your modern politically correct position, because you're only supposed to encourage. But there are faults. They have to be corrected. But how are they corrected? By being engaged in the Lord's service. But whenever there's a fault, you throw the whole thing out. So there is no engagement. There is no Krishna consciousness. So political correctness technically is not Krishna conscious by the modern method that it's used. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. The Vedic form means you see according to the particular individual and you deal with that individual according to their position. That's what Shastra says. So that's just called etiquette. That's just called being cultured. So it's because people are uncultured, therefore you have to dream up political correctness to kind of put a veneer of culture on those who are not cultured. You understand? Yeah, someone has to be careful about these.
It's very individual.
It's very individual, but it's very standard. So it's individual, but still the things that are wrong if anybody does them. And something that's right is right if anybody does it. So what's individual is what particular anarthas will be there or particular combinations. That's individual, so that's why you have to deal with the individual. But the standards, those aren't individual. The standards are eternal. You understand? That's the whole point. That's what flies in the face of the modern method, is that there are absolute standards. While the modern tries to make it as whatever we feel as a group, that becomes the standard. But absolute standard is there whether you accept it or not. You know, it's just like the two cats. They're Siamese, right? And you like that they're Siamese. Even if you don't like they're Siamese, they're still Siamese. It's just the way it is. So the absolute truth is the absolute truth. You like it? Great. You don't like it? It's still the absolute truth. It doesn't matter what you, your friends, this guy on that's trending on the internet says, this great guru, this book says, it does not matter at all. There's an absolute standard. You follow it, it works. You don't follow it, then everything falls apart. You have 1 minute.
We are collecting some donation for our society's welfare and pleasure of Guru. But sometimes some devotees are collecting some donation for Guru also, and society also, and personal also. But I heard in...
So which ones are the problem?
I read in Mahabharata.
No, but which one? You mentioned three. Collecting for the temple, collecting for Guru, and collecting for yourself. Which one's the problem?
Personal collection.
Okay, so collecting for Guru is okay.
Okay,
you're okay. Just one thing. There are those who will say that that's not okay also. Those who identify themselves as managers, then they say that's not okay. Those who identify themselves as devotees say that's okay. And collecting for yourself, what does that mean, collecting for yourself?
Collecting means, suppose I want to some computers or some things.
But is it authorized that that money goes there or it's not?
Sometimes devotee collect and give some temple also, and sometimes they ask.
No, but that person who's collecting, what's his authority for collecting?
Unauthorized sometimes.
Then you have a problem. But if it's authorized, then it's whatever it's authorized for, then that's how it works. And also technically whatever it's collected for, that's what it goes. You collect for the temple and give it to something else, you're not supposed to do that. It's supposed to be that what you collect for is what it's used for. Right? Does that make sense? Otherwise, according to Manu, technically you're supposed to pay it back. Okay, so if the temple says that a certain part, just like Prabhupada said for grihasthas, they could do book distribution and 25% of the collection they can keep. 25 means after paying off all the debts and taxes and stuff like that. So whatever profit you have. So if in the day's collection after paying the BBT and everything, you have, you know, 1,000 rupees, you can keep 250. And then the 75, that the 750, that goes to whoever you're working under, the temple or the BBT or whatever it is. So if it's authorized, it's fine. If it's not authorized, then that's a problem. Okay? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Shri Prabhupada ki Jai, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki Jai, Jai Nitai Gaura Priya.